This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Monday evening, January 16th, 1988, Rabbi A.H. Lappin.
The siddur that we read last week starts off in a very straightforward way and introducing us to a new approach to power. The opening words are Yomer Hashem El Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Bo El Pharaoh, go to Pharaoh, ki ani yichbaneti et libo ves leva vodov, leman shisios insai eile v'kipa. He says the real, the translation is, come to Pharaoh. And this is a question that is asked, why doesn't it say lech el Pharaoh, go to Pharaoh? Why does it say come to Pharaoh? So the answer that is given is Hashem says, come to Pharaoh, in other words, come with me to Pharaoh. I will be with you all the time that you are with Pharaoh. Because it's the easiest thing for Pharaoh just to say, I'll put his head in, that's all. Bo el Pharaoh, come with me to Pharaoh. Ki ani hichbaneti et libo, because I have hardened his heart. And you might say, well, you've hardened his heart, but his advisors are going to tell him to give way. I've hardened the heart of his servants, his officers also. So you should know that he's not going to give in. So why do I send you to him? Why? Laman shi si osensai eile bekirbo, in order that I might put these my signs bekirbo into his lips. And as you've probably garnered from the last sedra and this sedra, each one of the plagues comes to teach something. It starts, Ki ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Ki ani Hashem bekerev ha'aretz, I am Hashem. And the next great lesson was, the first lesson was, that Hashem is the creator. The second great lesson is, not only is he the creator, but he is in charge of the universe. He cares about it. He's interested. He's concerned about it. It all has a purpose. And that is Hashem. So these signs are that they should know that it is so. That they are not their own masters. They are not masters of their own destiny. They are in the hands of Hashem. How easily Hashem can change things. And from being on the crest of the wave, they can lose everything overnight. And they must be aware of that. That is the idea of the time. Now, the great question is, he says, because I have hardened his heart. The question is the same. Hashem hardened Pharaoh's heart, and then he gets punished for it afterwards. That isn't fair. Hashem takes away predetermination of will from him, but it isn't after. What is the meaning of it all? Now to that, we have got three answers that are given. The first answer is given by the Sipurna. And that is, the Sipurna or the Sforna says as follows. Hashem didn't take away his predetermination of will. This was the question now. He has suffered so much from the plague. Is he now going to let the people go out of conviction? Or is he going to let them go because he's afraid of the consequences? There's a very big difference. Hashem wants him to let them go out of conviction, and not because out of fear of the consequences. So what does Hashem do? He makes him forget all that impact of each plague. When the plague is gone, he has forgotten the impact. Hasn't left him with anything. Since it hasn't left him with anything, now he's got real predetermination of will. Is he going to let them go or is he not going to let them go? He decides not to let them go. In other words, does he retain the lesson or not? So in order to know whether he retains the lesson or not, Hashem has to make it that he forgets the impact, the suffering he forgets. Now, are you going to let them go? If you've learned the lesson that everything is in the hands of Hashem, if you've learned that lesson, you let them go, even if you've forgotten the impact. Says, no. Now is the test, says the Sforno. Now is the test, and he doesn't let them go. He hasn't learned the lesson. Made no impact on him at all. Now, I'll come back again to that later. That is the first answer that he gives. The second answer is given by the Rambam. The Rambam says that, and the Rambam takes it from the Midrash. It's surprising how little of the Rambam is his own, because he always goes to a source. He won't say anything without a source. The way he interprets his source, that is his own. But he always works on a source. Now, the Rambam says that what happens here is, in every man's life, the good and the evil, and he decides whether to do good or whether to do evil. The man who decides to do evil and is doing evil all his life, that evil becomes worse and worse, and Hashem gives him the opportunity to return almost. Erech HaPayim, Hashem is long-suffering, no say over the iniquities of the people, gives them every chance to return, to do tshuva. There comes a point of no return, where Hashem says, now there's no chance of return anymore. When that comes, the greatest punishment that can be is that Hashem takes away from him the opportunity to do tshuva, to return. That the man loses. And says the Rambam, that is what happened in this particular instance. He was so wicked, Paro was so wicked, and he went so far that he was taken, the ability to do tshuva, that was taken away from him. And that is what it means, Hashem hardened his heart. The third view that he's given is given by the Tzfat Emes. Now, the Tzfat Emes belongs to our period. He died, what have we got now, 89. He died about 85 years ago. So he actually went into this century. One of our very great lights. He was the Rebbe of the Geira Chassidim. And he gives another explanation altogether. And it's with that explanation that I want to deal with it. He says, when Hashem says, "Ki hichbadati et leipano," for I have hardened the heart of Pharaoh, what he is saying is that I have given him the opportunity to go against that which he recognizes is true and is right. A person has got that ability. So you can know that this is true and this is right. And Hashem nevertheless gives him that ability that he can go against it. Yes? Everyone say that?
Don't we have that ability all the time? And would Pharaoh not have had it?
Not quite to the same degree. That actually recognizing it, and in spite of that recognition, being able to go against it. And not only that, but Hashem still supports it. Well, I'll explain to you the name. The Tzfat Emes. The Tzfat Emes. Tzfat Emes, I say, that is the Geira. He was the great one of the Geira. But very great. he was a lot older than the Chofetz Chaim. You see, he died 30 years before the Chofetz Chaim died, and he just did for the world in his day what the Chofetz Chaim did afterwards in the world for his day. Now, I just want to discuss one or two things with you. If we take the first case, and that is the case of the Sforno, who says that all Hashem did was he took away from him the impact of the suffering. He forgets the suffering. So he's learned the lesson. The only thing is it through the suffering and the fear that he lets the people go, or is it because of the conviction? And what we've got to know is that Hashem has given us, we are able to work things out. That is one ability, and that is the intellectual ability to work things out. After you have worked it out, the question is, now, how am I? Is it part of me? Is it part of me or not? If it isn't part of me, then all sorts of consequences come about. For example, you get a scientist and he works out, he knows everything, so much about the universe, much more than any of us know about the universe. He knows about the universe. The scientist taught him, he experimented, he has experienced it all, and he knows it all. Is there a creator or is there not a creator? And he comes to the conclusion that there is not a creator. The evidence he's got, the knowledge he's got, the evidence he's got, and yet he comes to the conclusion that there is not a creator. So there are two things we've got to understand. The first is, why is it possible? How is it possible? And the second thing we've got to understand is, what is this? And how does one avoid it? Now, why it is possible? This is the reason why it's possible. As we've been learning in the Monday morning shiur, Hashem has created in the world good and evil. And it's all over. It's in ourselves. We have good in ourselves and we have evil in ourselves. All the circumstances in the world are such that there is good and there is evil. And the idea is that we have to make the choice. Why is it so important for us to make the choice? Because by us making the choice and deciding what is evil, then we develop and we become better people if we make the right choice. And when we become better people, it is something that we have done ourselves. It is not something that has been given to us, but it is something that we have achieved ourselves. We have made it we ourselves have made it, and we are our own masters of it. And that is the opportunity that Hashem has given. So everything that Hashem gives us is of His goodness. But if it were just that He showered us with His goodness and we didn't earn it, it would have been bread of charity. That isn't real goodness. So to enjoy that, it has to be our own. So everything that there is in the universe, there is room for doubt. One can come to such a conclusion intellectually, know so much about the universe, that it doesn't make sense to say that there isn't a creator. And indeed, some of the very great scientists have said, you've got to say that there is a creator. Einstein was one of them, but that's as far as he went. He didn't go any further than that. That there is a creator. The universe couldn't have come into being by chance. But the opportunity is given for doubt, and the opportunity is given to go wrong. Because if that opportunity isn't there, then saying that there is a creator, and with all that implies, that wouldn't be my own. So the emunah is always a struggle. Belief and faith is always a struggle. Doesn't come easy. And the reason that it is a struggle is it's man's own acquisition. He's got to get these things. So the first thing is, knowledge is one thing we are expected to know. But we must know that even after the knowledge, there can be all that doubt. So what is the next thing to do? And this is the great thing that is in the Torah, where the Torah says, V'yodato hayom v'ashevulso el bovecho. You shall know it this day. That is the knowledge. And after you know it, v'ashevulso el bovecho, and you shall lay it up in your heart. You shall put it into your heart. And that is that you feel it. And you feel it to such an extent that it is all part of you. It is your personality already. So there's a difference between knowing it and between knowing it to the extent that this is your whole personality. Leib Yitzchok Pettenberger says that the difference between knowing it and that it becomes part of your personality, part of your being, that difference is greater than the difference between not knowing and knowing. So great is that difference. And we experience it all the time. For example, today there is no doubt that smoking kills. No doubt about it. Look how many people are still smoking. Look how many women are still smoking. And there's no doubt that it kills. Been proven already. Everybody knows it. Knowing it, and that it's part of one's whole being, that's not. If it would be, if you smoke a cigarette today, you're going to die within 3 days, people wouldn't smoke if that were true. But who knows, it takes a long time. It's not part of one. But when it becomes part of one, you take this knowledge, now this is knowledge, and you absorb it. And you know what life means to you and how precious life is. That is this of your data again. So what the Sipurnu says is about father. Knowing it, he knew it. He knew it. The question was, once he knew, was it really part of his whole being? Or was it just knowledge that he knew, dry knowledge that didn't affect his life at all? Takes away the fear of the punishment, loses that punishment. Now, is he any different from what he was with the knowledge? Got the knowledge and he's no different. And we can understand the story that is told about Aristotle, and it's brought in our literature, the story is brought, of how he trains his students, he writes a whole treatise on ethics, forms an important part of the many branches of science and philosophy in which he delved, and in which he had a tremendous amount of knowledge. When Aristotle knew that the earth was round, he knew the mistake he made. He worked out the diameter of the earth. He made a mistake. But to go as far as that, and so long ago, 2,500 years ago, that he was able to do. And the story is told, you know the story probably, of that he trained his students, and one day his students came to his home. They wanted to see him. And as they came in, they saw him, he was naked, and he was gorging himself with food. And they felt so embarrassed that they backed out. He said, no, I want you to come in. I want to teach you something. And they came in, and he said, I want you to know, you do what I teach you to do, but you don't do what I do. Why doesn't he do what he teaches others to do? Why doesn't he do it? Does he believe in it or doesn't he believe in it? Is it knowledge or isn't it knowledge? Of course it is knowledge. That he knows to be right. But it's only knowledge. There is no feeling to it. Hasn't gone right into his character. Made no difference to his character. And so we find all along that one can have very educated people, and education makes no difference to the character of the person. One can find cultured people, and the culture makes no difference to the character of the person. It doesn't go deep. It's all on the surface, and it doesn't deep. People were so surprised, you can imagine how surprised as they were in the time of Hitler, that the Jews in Germany couldn't believe that this could ever happen. Couldn't believe it. That the Germans would ever disenfranchise the Jews. They are the most cultured people. They're the most cultured nation in Europe. Couldn't happen. Much worse than that happened. With all the education, with all the culture, it made no difference at all to their genes. Didn't affect them at all. And that is what we learn. Knowledge, we have to have knowledge. But the knowledge has got to be such, it is part of the personality of the character. Not part, it is. But that knowledge is the personality of the character. And that is the whole purpose of Musar. And Musar is Torah. And the purpose of Musar is that we should be able, that which we learn, that it actually becomes our character. I might have a word or more to say about it later this evening on how to achieve it. So that is how we understand this formula. When it comes to the Rambam, and the Rambam says that the ability to do tshuva, the power of tshuva was taken away, that was his punishment. The Rambam doesn't mean that it is in punishment, that this is a punishment that is imposed on him. What he means to say is that a man can do this to himself. He can go so far that he loses any attachment to godliness whatsoever. I'm not saying even to God, but he loses any attachment to godliness. Once he loses any attachment, and the attachment can be in various forms, he can be very close to Hashem, or he can be further from Hashem. The attachment can be only with a string. It can be with a piece of cotton. But it becomes so weak, and it's a piece of cotton, and just with one little tug, he goes one step further, he breaks. No attachment to godliness was there. If there's no attachment to godliness, no chance of return. Not altogether right. Even the Rambam knows that it's very, very difficult now. Very, very difficult. But a chance there is always. However difficult it might be. And that is the Rambam. And now finally, we've got the Sfasen. And the Sfasenus, this is what he says to me. Ichbaliti es leiv parer. I have created it in such a way that can recognize all this, got a recognition of all this, and he's got power. Not just that he doesn't want it, he's got all that power. Hashem gives him all that power that he can go against. Now, this is a very remarkable thing in our thought and in our thinking. And that is, Hashem, everything that we have got is from Hashem. We've got life. So, there can be a man who uses his life and uses it to do wrong. The whole of his life he uses to do wrong. and God continues to give him life. In spite of his doing wrong. In other words, God is giving him still the means of life. There is a great verse that we have got, and it is written by one who belonged to the school of Sufism, and that is the school that existed in the 16th century, in the 1500s, in Sufism. And you had this remarkable school, of which the Ari was really the head, and he was considered to be the robot of Sufism. And then you had all these others. You had the author of the Shulchan Aruch, who was the Dayan, and you had the Moshe Kuldeviro, who was the Baal Mekubal. He was the Kabbalist of that age, of the part of that whole school. And he wrote a work which he called Tomar Tevoro, the Palm of Tevoro. Why he called it the Palm of Tevoro, I don't know, but that's what he called it. And he speaks there about a commandment in the Torah to walk in God's way. And he tells us that to walk in God's way is to emulate God. So he says, if you want to emulate God, take all the attributes that are described in the Torah, for example, about that Godhead. The first are Hashem and Hashem. Now, Hashem means he is the God of forgiveness. That is, he forgives, but it says twice Hashem and Hashem. So he forgives when a person does wrong and asks for forgiveness, he forgives. The second Hashem is, and it's a strange concept, even when a person does, before a person does wrong, Hashem has already forgiven. What does it mean? Before a person has done wrong, Hashem has already forgiven.
Okay. Hashem,
Shem, Shem, that's afterwards. The first one is Hashem, Hashem. So that is, we are like that with our children. Very difficult to do it to a strange person. If we know that a strange person is going to harm us, can we think of forgiving him? But if a child of ours is going to do something, and it's going to hurt us very much, we are already ready to forgive him before he's even done it. And that is a special type of mercy that Hashem has with us. Rachum is compassionate. He is gracious to us. Erech Apayim is long-suffering. Now, the Tomer Devorah takes all these things and so says, that is what we are expected to be towards our fellow man, to act in the same way. Now, I just want to give you a case of a historical case, and that is Hashem gives a person the ability to do evil. He's doing evil. Won't take his life away from him. Won't rob him of that. There were two cases, also belong to this century. The one case was with the great Slabodka Yeshiva. There was the Slabodka Yeshiva, and the head of it was Rebnote Hirschfinkel. He was the head of it. In the Slabodka Yeshiva, there arose a period of dissension, and it was over Musa. And part of the yeshiva said they don't want to learn Musa. It's not necessary to learn Musa. Musa takes away half an hour a day at least. That half a day, hour a day, they want to spend in learning. They got support outside of the yeshiva, so they left the yeshiva and formed the yeshiva on their own. They got a great man to take part in that, in this battle. And this great man said, it's quite right, rather spend that half hour a day on Torah, and from your Torah you'll get your Musa. You don't have to deal with that as a special subject. They started on their own, but they didn't have any money. That not a Hirsch supported them. They had done this against him, but he supported them. They are learning Torah, and they've got to be supported. he continued to support them. Could have broken them. Not supported them. Could have broken them. No, they are learning Torah and support them. Eventually, it crumbled, and this great man who led it went away to Poland and made his own yeshiva. In his later years, he withdrew from it all. That to have Musa. Now, if there's anybody that didn't need Musa, it was this particular man. He was just, he was only Torah, that's all he was. But in his, afterwards, when he had his own yeshiva, he introduced Musa. And he said, this has to be. And the second case was in the Telger Yeshiva, where the head of the Telger Yeshiva wanted one of his sons to be a Rosh Yeshiva, to be in the Yeshiva and to teach in the Yeshiva. And the Yeshiva didn't want it. So they objected to it and wouldn't go to any Shiurim at all, but continued to learn in the Yeshiva. Now, a boy learning in the yeshiva in those days couldn't exist if the yeshiva didn't support him. And the old Telger Rav could have broken it overnight just by withdrawing the support. That he wouldn't do. Supported them all the time. But they were doing this support to harm him. Didn't matter. But they were there. So I'm giving you these two examples, and they belong to this century. These are examples of how one behaves even when people are harming us. But they are doing the right thing also. For the right thing that they are doing, that deserves our support. That we give it to them. So here we've got these three views, and the last view is that of the Rambam, that of the Tzfat-Emes. Hashem says, give him the power to do wrong, that he can do, all that power. Still, he's got the life, and he goes on. Now, I just want to discuss with you, so, how does one get to it? How is one able to overcome all this, and to get to a stage where one knowledge goes deeper until it becomes one's personality? One of the important ways of doing it is through precious. And I want to explain to you what that means. I told you earlier this evening that every person has got the good and the bad. And that must be in order that he should have this struggle to be able to overcome the bad, and then whatever he makes of himself, that is his own. That he is now the owner of whatever he has achieved. We must remember that in the world there is that which is natural and that which is over nature and above nature. With all the praise that we have been reading about, that is outside of nature. That is above nature. But we don't have to go so far. Even in our own lives, if we think of it carefully, we'll find that there are things that are perfectly natural that happen to us. We get ill and we recover. Perfectly natural things. But there are things that happen in our lives which are not natural. We want to do something and we are thwarted. We can't do it. It doesn't come about. Years afterwards, we discover that had we done it, it would have been disastrous. Why didn't we do it? It wasn't our ingenuity. There was just something that held us back. But it can't be explained, actually. And today, we find it in so many different ways. And that is the way it's got to be today. And the most prominent way in which we find it expressed is where people are coming back to Torah. How do they come back to Torah? Why do they come back to Torah? You can't explain it naturally. That Torah survived the Second World War and it revived and it is becoming stronger and stronger, cannot be explained naturally. Everything is going against it. But these are the things that happen. So there are things that happen with Teva, with nature. There are things that happen lemailo mina Teva, above nature. Now, God works with us lemailo mina Teva. He works with us above nature. How does he work with us above nature? There are things that are natural in us. It is natural for a person to become angry. It's natural for a person, if one does him wrong, not to forgive. It's natural for a person, if he's been wrong, to take revenge. It's natural to be vindictive. Not hundreds, but there are thousands of things like that, some big, some small, that it's natural for a person to do. Now, we are expected to break those natural instincts and urges. And that is what we call Shpiras HaMidah. It is the breaking of a needle. So we've got a needle, we've got an attribute, and it's a bad attribute. Person resentful. Resents anything that is done to him, it's not just as he wants it, he resents it. It's a bad needle. So one can break that needle, one can train oneself. Person is complaining. He's got everything that a heart could desire. Still it's not enough. He's complaining. One can cure oneself of it. One can discipline oneself. One can break it. But if one breaks it, one is going against nature. And this is the great quarrel we've got with the majority of the school of psychiatry and psychology, who say you mustn't go against nature. And we say we must go against nature. That is what we are here for. And we want to break that. Now, Hashem deals with us lemaila min hateva, over and above what is natural, commensurate with the amount we achieve in breaking that which is natural in us. And so there is a commensuration between the two. And as I explained this morning, this is the first thing in the yeshivas that were in the period between the two world wars, and certainly between before the First World War. Shviras HaMidah was the very first thing you were taught when you came to yeshiva. And here you are dealing with young men who are the pick of the world. They are 17, 18, 19 years of age. They have studied well till now. They are the pick of the world, and they come in. This is the first thing they are taught. Now, you must know, and they've been prepared before they come into the yeshiva, that you've got bad meters. There's nobody that hasn't got bad meters. Set about immediately on Shviras HaMidah. You don't have to break all of them. Just work on one. Get it under control, that you are complete master of it. And if you can achieve that, then the rest comes easy. And that is what we are expected to do. Now, I've tried to explain to you this evening the three schools of thought that we've got with the question of Hashem hardening Pharaoh's heart. I've explained to you how that affects us in the way, first of all, according to the Sipurim, that to have the conviction, that we must have the conviction. But if conviction is not enough, the knowledge, conviction, it still has to be that it becomes part of us. And that is that we live our lives in accordance with those convictions. And finally, it's a question of how to achieve it. To achieve it is very difficult. That it becomes part of our being, of our personality. And the way we achieve it is by working on ourselves, by breaking any bad we do. If we go against our nature, that is what this is the nature with which we've been endowed, and we go against that, then through that, the way God deals with us is also against nature, the mila minateva. And so these are the things that happen to us in life, and this is the way we carry on. That's a short share today. If there are any questions you want to ask me, let me ask me now. Yes, sir. There's just a question there, because the question of free will. Why should Hashem have done it? Why should Hashem have suffered these hearts?
As a learning process.
Well, but doesn't do that. That is one has to do oneself. That is an achievement one has to do oneself. You can get, there is such a thing as a divine help, but then you're working on it. And that is what Hashem says. You just make an opening.
But he was, yeah, Paro wasn't doing it.
Was he? He didn't get
Hashem
it.
Hashem didn't feel he deserved that. To have any.
Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
Rabbi, I was under a false impression that the reason for hardening Herod's heart, not once, but twice and on and on many times, was as a lesson to the Jewish people also, that it wasn't just an easy thing to let Pharaoh, to have Pharaoh let them believe that it was indeed, a lot of things had to take place by God doing all these different things.
But why should it be like that? Wouldn't it have been better for the Jewish people had Pharaoh said, certainly, you've been here long enough? So what difference would it have been made spiritually? They'd already gone through a terrible hard time, They'd just about reached the end of their resources. They couldn't take it anymore. So what was the idea? They didn't suffer from the plague. So the plagues didn't help us.
No, the plagues didn't.
The question is, why did Hashem harden his heart with regard to the plagues? That is the question.
But your response is that it was a lesson to Pharaoh.
A lesson to the Pharaoh and to the world that they should know how much the Almighty is involved in what goes on in the world. That was the lesson. And if they knew how much he was involved, they, God was involved, then one has to be careful. One has to take that into consideration. And when he's suffering, if one goes against it, one suffers. And that was something that he didn't have. He learnt it. He knew it, and he learnt it. Made no difference to his life. And the question is, how is it that it didn't make any difference to his life? And that is the part that concerns all of us. We know what is right. Not always. We've reached the stage today in the modern world where people don't know what is right anymore. Once upon a time we knew. Take the words of the Torah, even Gentiles knew that there was the Bible and they knew what it meant to live by. Today that is of course thrown away. So people don't even know. But even the people who do know what is right, and far cry from knowing what is right and living according to that. One can have great learning without any piety. One can have great learning without any character. Character is something else. That is subject that we discuss and that we deal with. Yes,
Rabbi,
He starts off the portion telling Moshe that he's going to harm Pharaoh's heart, and that Pharaoh's not going to let the people go. And yet he asks Moshe to come with him and ask him, ask Pharaoh to let the people go. Isn't it wrong to ask him to make a choice when there is no choice?
Yes, it's true that he asked him to do that, but he says that this is to prove something. You know, we do it when we bring up our children. We say to a child, now, don't go near the fire. And he goes near the fire, he says, don't go near the fire. Then the time comes when you're not going to say to him anymore. You decide that you know what's going to happen. You decide that, well, let him go, and see the consequences. And he goes and he puts him down in the fire and he gets burnt. But you know he's never going to do it again. So the idea is to bring certain matters to the world that the world should know. Not only Pharaoh, but all his people should know. And gradually that comes about, that they get to know. But in order for that to be brought to its conclusion, these plays have got to take place. So that is the way Hashem works. Plagues have got to take place. And in the end, of course, there's a punishment also. Smiting of the firstborn, that is a punishment. Yes,
Would you frame what the five members were saying?
I'll try. He said, I have given him a power where he can recognize the truth. And not that it hasn't gone right in, we can recognize the truth and actually rebel against it. Recognizes the truth and then he rebels against it. And that is a power that is very much with every human being. It's one thing, I don't want to do it because it's difficult for me to do. I don't want to do it because by not doing it I'm going to lose out. So I think. But I'm not going to do it just because I'm rebelling against it. It happened during the 60s and the 70s, when the young people rebelled. And what did they rebel against? What was it that they rebelled against? What was wrong with them? What was wrong with them? What was wrong with them? Well, it's come to such a degree now, and I've told you many times that the Gemara speaks about it, that this is going to happen. And when I learned this, I couldn't imagine that this could ever be possible. And I've lived to see it happen. Where the Gemara says that parents will be afraid of their children. Elders will be afraid of the young ones. And masters and teachers will be afraid of their students. And their students will tell them what to do. One of the universities said that he can't give a student a bad mark because the student assess the professor once a term or once a two. They assess the professor. He says he gives a bad mark. He says his job depends on it. He says, I can't do it. So I let everybody pass. I said, let it go through. I can't do it any other way. Now, the Gemara speaks about that. And when I learnt it, I just couldn't understand that because I didn't believe it would ever come about. And yeah, I lived to see it. Now, that is just to rebel against it. To rebel against that authority. The Idrashev, no doubt about it. Because he comes and he says afterwards, he says, I have sinned. Hashem is righteous, and we are the wicked one. He says that. And then he goes back. So you know, he's got all that recognition. and then he goes back again. Have I made such a thing clearer? This is a rebellion. The ability to rebel.
As opposed to the first.
As opposed to, it's just, look here, it's not palatable to me to do that. Look what I'm going to lose by letting these people go. Now it's no longer a question like that. It's just rebelling against Hashem. Excuse me, rebelling against authority. That is the point that he makes. Right? I've given you these three different views, and that of course we get this all along. These are three different views in explanation of how it is. What is the idea of Hashem hardening Pharaoh's heart? Now, it's not that these are three conflicting opinions. We say, it's all good, it's right. It just depends from what angle you look at it. But each one of these interpretations that are given is a correct interpretation. But what I want to be able to do is that we find it in our own lives, we find exactly the same thing happening. When we find people, according to the Rambam, we find people that go so far away. Say, well, this is hardly a human being anymore. And what I've said was that it doesn't mean to say that God takes away. He does it himself to such an extent that he breaks. Any connection between godliness and himself is broken. There's just no connection. And when that comes, to get back again, that is something that is very difficult. Very difficult. It is easier for a person who has never learned Torah, doesn't know what it is, to come to Torah and to go far in Torah, than it is for a person who had Torah, then abandoned it, and now wants to come back. That is, to come back is far more difficult. Right. Yes,
you may want to save this for a future year, but even after all of this, I think the thing is just amazing. After all of this learning, and the final blow, which is the loss of the firstborn, still later on, as we know, he changes his mind and he comes after them. You know, against the final blow of having his army ground. Do you want to touch on what's happened? In that process, does it fall into these three categories again? Is that an effect? The 11th
Maka,
or what?
In the Midrash, there's a very interesting thing. The Midrash says that Pharaoh did do tshuva, and it was a proper tshuva. And the proper tshuva is that you're not going to do the wrong again. When did it happen? When he was in the water. When the water came back over him, then it happened that that was a proper tshuva. That is the time. A little bit late, still. Even then is better than never at all. He said, but that was a proper tshuva. But the Midrash is very interesting. In the story of Yonah and Nineveh, when Yonah was spat out and he had to go to Nineveh, then you know what happened. He spoke to the people and they did tshuva. Midrash links that up. That was possible because at the last moment Pharaoh did do tshuva. So with all that wickedness there was still the possibility to do tshuva. So that is linked up. That still sort of, there was something left of that, that when the king of Nineveh, when this message came to him, he immediately did tshuva. Something was done. That is a Midrash. An interesting Midrash, but the Midrash speaks about that. Yes.
We learned a long time ago that the Pharaoh would say, and I've forgotten the expression, it's something echad, which was explained to us means not including the last one, but rather accept one.
Yes.
What is the...
That's right.
And that would fit in with what you just
That's
said.
Exactly, yes.
That if he did Shiva, and he was in fact saved.
He was in fact saved. He did at the very last moment. But when the Medrash says he did Shiva, it was a proper Shiva. That means it wasn't the Shiva that afterwards, when it's all over, you go back to what you were before. It was a proper Shiva at the very last moment. When all this was happening, then he did Shiva. That is right. It is Ad Echod, Ad Echod, until one, that's quite right. It is until one, that one was saved, that is Pharaoh, that one, that Pharaoh was actually saved at the very end. He did that Shiva. Shiva is a difficult thing to do. Proper Shiva.
But his advisors also were advising him to go after what have you done?
Yes, yes, but already earlier his advisors said, now we can't contend with this.
Yeah.
This is Etzba Elohim. This is something that is far beyond us. We can't let them go already. But it was also let them go because we can't take the suffering anymore.
Right. So
they can't take
the conviction without
fear. That to do this by Shevoso Elamobecho, that the conviction, first of all, that the knowledge becomes conviction, and the conviction becomes the personality of the person. This is something that is very difficult. I mean, we just have to try it with ourselves. That is what it's all about. And the idea of Musav is that Torah becomes the personality of the person. That this is a Torah personality. And once it's a Torah personality, there is no disparity between piety and learning. This is learning and pious, and there is complete conformity between the two. And that is the idea of it all.
How do you describe piety?
The
way you described it this morning, and I
I described it Talmid Chochem this morning, was a person, there was no disparity between his learning and his piety. That is, all his learning is expressed in his character. Well, piety is the carrying out of all that is in the Torah. But carrying it out to that degree that is required, because there are degrees. Piety is already a very great degree. You see, I'll just give you an example of piety. When something goes wrong in our lives, how do we deal with it? One way of dealing with it is to accept it. Well, okay, this has happened, I accept it, and I've got to do the best with it to get it out. That's one way. The total way is that anything that happens to us in our lives comes to us from the Rebbeinu Shlomo. It's there for a reason. Whatever the reason is, but it is there for a reason. Now you already, this is already a total way of doing it. And if a person accepts it that way, that there's a reason for it, I accept it because that is the way Hashem wants it. There's a reason for it. I'm going to try and find out the reason and do accordingly and work accordingly. But it must be for good things also. If a good thing happens to me, there's also a reason. One, but that's all right. Then there comes another degree, and that is a degree, it's a little bit further than the priest saying everything comes from God, and this we call Siddur Kadim. It comes from God, but it's right what God did. I might not know the reason, but one thing I'm certain of, that it is right and it is just. For example, if I, heaven forbid, I'm in front of a judge and he passes sentence over me. I can think that that sentence is a wrong sentence. It's a mistake. I might have done something wrong, but the sentence is far too grave for what I did. That is what I might think when it comes to Hashem v'es Tzidukati. I'm quite certain Hatzul Tomim Po'olo Tomim V'yosheru Kehod Rochov Emes. Hashem is perfect. Everything that he does with integrity, and it's absolutely right and correct, whatever judgment he is given. That's Tzidukati, that's going still further. All right? But that's still not piety. Right? The person is a tzaddik if he works that way. But piety is still not piety. Now, what is piety? And Rabbeinu Yelmer gives an example of piety. He said, piety is that you are so certain that it is right what God has done to me, that it's not just a question that I'm satisfied that God's I found, I've been thinking about it, I found in the Rabbeinu Yonah. The Rabbeinu Yonah says as follows. He says, this is already piety. This goes beyond tzidkus. A person now is beyond a tzaddik. Now he is pious. What a person, example is given is that a man has got a tenant farmer working for him. And he says to his tenant farmer, a third of all the crop that you raise, that is yours. Well, a month later it's made an arrangement. The tenant farmer needs money, so he borrows money from a few months go past again, borrows more money from him. In the end he collects all the harvest. It's a very good harvest, and the owner takes everything and he's left with nothing, and he's very happy. He goes home and they say, what are you so happy about? You've worked a whole year and you've got nothing for it. He said, I'm happy the debt has been paid. I don't owe anything anymore. I'm very happy. The pious person is, in all his suffering, he's happy. The debt has been paid. But for that it requires piety. The piety to the greater degree than that of the tzaddik.
Is it not possible to be a little pious?
The little is always possible. Not only that, very real, of course. And a person can have piety in one direction, one little bit. It's worth a tremendous amount. Other things not absolutely possible. No question about it. But you see the degree to which it is. Now, I knew Reporter Pogromansky, and I knew well. And he had a life during the war. He was, for 3 or 4 years, he lived in the forest, summer and winter. And the goyim brought him food because they believed that as long as they kept him alive, no harm would befall them. As long as they kept him alive. They kept him alive throughout the war. And after the war, he contracted tuberculosis and all sorts of things. And he was in the hospital in Lausanne and he was dying. And he refused to have morphine. He refused to have any kind of painkiller. And Rabbi Sternbuch told me, Rabbi Sternbuch, when he was in Johannesburg, told me that he saw him during this time in Lausanne. And he wouldn't have anything given to him. And he said, this is the way it's got to be. Absolutely happy. Really getting a person like that. Now, you know, I've often told you, I've got the advantage that I still had to do with these people. I still knew these people. the way they behaved. I gave an example of Lotte Hirsch. They did this against him. They were breaking his yeshiva, but they were learning. He supported them. Could have broken them. They were learning. He supported them. That is piety. To be a tzaddik, you don't have to do it. And to still be a tzaddik. But that's already going into piety.
Does that tie in at all with the
motivation
that I'm going to take
it, my
punishment,
back
around again
in the year? Yes, oh yes. It's got nothing to do with that. You know, in my time I've seen so much. I've seen already the results of it. The results of it. What a man did and how much he sacrificed only because it was the right thing. And it meant a lot of suffering for him. And I see the results. His grandchildren, his children, what his children were able to do. He was killed in the war, but his children escaped. And what his grandchildren are now doing, and now it's already gone on to the next generation, to great grandchildren. Nothing goes lost. Nothing goes lost. That is what he did, still preparing for his eyes. One more question. Yes?
If somebody, the woman was a shaykh.
Yes.
And both the woman and the mother are shaykh.
Yes.
Does that affect the grandchildren?
Yeah, I can't answer that question. All I can say is there's a big difference if a woman wears a shaitan because she looks much better in it, or if a woman wears a shaitan even if she looks much worse in it. Now today women wear shaitans and they look much better in it. But when I first got married, when a woman wore a shaitan, she looked much worse in it. Much worse. And if then a woman wore a shaker, then I think that makes a very big difference to the children. That's already sacrifice. Anything that's with a sacrifice that goes against nature, then Hashem deals with us, not the Derech HaTeva, doesn't deal with us in that true way. That is the best way I can answer that question. But please remember there's a very big difference. And that it's so easy to wear a shaitan today. God has made everything easy. Easy to keep Shabbos. Easy to eat kashrus. And it's coming easier all the time. Once you couldn't get kosher food at all, except in your own home. Today you can even get Chinese cuisine that's kosher. You can get everything. How easy it made. How easy it is to go to yeshiva, how easy it is to learn. Everything is made so easy, because otherwise, I'm afraid you didn't, nothing would be kept. So Hashem has made it easy, so it's there. Made it much easier for us. This is all Minas Shemayim. It's just not natural the way it's become like this. Just not natural. You want to buy a novel that not only is it not worthwhile reading, it's harmful. You've got to pay $20 for it today. You want to get a Gemara, you can get for $5. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. People tell me, there's a medical specialist, and showed me a book. He said, "Yeah, I've just bought this book, little book, $60 and he bought a shas. He said, "I paid $400 for the shas." It doesn't make sense. He said, "The paper alone, so cheap. How can it be so cheap?" Well, this is what it is. It can't, it's not natural, you see. All these things are, it's against Teva, all this that is happening today. It's just not natural. And there was a whole period when Jews, the period before the war, Jews were doing all the time things that were just against nature doing it. You see the fruits of it. Right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.